The Radio Today programme with Audioboo.
Thank you for connecting with the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dann. All the usual ingredients to come. But first, let's hook up for the first time on this podcast with the former CEO of GMG Radio, former chief exec of the Radio Academy, author, broadcaster, bon viveur. Yes, it's John Myers. John, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. You know, people say to me, the former boss of GMG Radio, but it's actually 5 years ago this month since I left. So where's those 5 years gone, eh?
Well, you know, you'll be like Alex Ferguson. He'll always be former manager of Manchester United, whatever he does, won't he?
And there's a lot of formers in my career now.
We wanted to talk to you about a few things, John. The former Sony Awards, if we can call them those. Yeah. We'll come on to that in a minute. And we'd like to know what you're up to, really. But basically, first of all, you wrote a blog on the Radio Today site about regulation. You were talking about Heart in Cornwall and problems that they've had with Ofcom. And you use that as a starting point once again to talk about the whole issue of regulation and commercial radio. It seems to me that you're very rapidly moving towards a position, and maybe you've held it before, that says, do you know what? We don't need any of this regulation at all. Is that what you're saying?
Well, actually, I'm in favour of some regulation. I'm just not in favour of daft regulation. Because, you know, there used to be all sorts of regulation. There used to go from the promise of performance, which was, you know, two or three sheets of paper. Then it went to a format. And, of course, all around us, we've got a growing, unregulated, ambitious and highly creative competitors. And yet, you know, the radio industry is still having to be handcuffed by what I absolutely believe is out-of-date regulation. And so, you know, I'm not saying this is really down to Ofcom in as much as that they're, you know, they don't want to do it. But it's very hard for a regulator to keep pace when everything around them is moving at an incredible rate. And so they do catch up, but they catch up, I think, later than they should, by the very nature that they're a regulator. But I am in favour of regulation. For example, as I said in my blog, that, you know, I think that the things that Ofcom can regulate are things like news and the things that they should be doing, but they shouldn't be regulating the duration of those things. And that's what got me slightly hot under the collar, I think, with when I saw the Heart issue. And I'm not by any measure saying that Heart are not at fault there, because they are. And you can tell by the response that they gave, they didn't actually defend it. What they said was, well, we've actually got more people listening now, et cetera, et cetera. And we go to more events. I love that one. Yeah. We go to more events as a reason why format erosion was okay. But the fact is, though, in this world, in 2014, we really have got to get a grip and start ensuring that radio stations are operating under a format that is relevant for the modern world.
Now, the regulator has seemed, I think it's fair to say, ambivalent about the business of turning former ILR stations into networks. That seems to be unstoppable now, doesn't it? And if we reach that position, why do we need any regulation?
It goes back to this thing is that people get a free license. It's free. And in return for that, it's not unreasonable for any regulator or any government to say, well, we want something in return for that. And that should be some areas of localness. And that should be, I think, around local news. I know some people don't agree with me on that, but I do think that a local station should provide local news, and they should be available to come out of network when, you know, in times of crisis or floods and things like that. But other than that, the regulation of formats in terms of what music you play, I think, is certainly outdated. And in trying to say to presenters that you've got to keep talking about an area, even though the people in that area know the station's coming from London, is just bonkers and hardly relevant, I think, to this modern age. So I do think, you know, regulation is good as long as it's the appropriate regulation for the times we live in.
Broadening it out, John, what's your best guess now about the fate of your former stations, which were bought by Global and are now going to have to be divested?
Do you know, I have absolutely no idea what's going to happen to them. So it's 5 years since I've been part of it. I mean, you hear things. you know, but actually, no one really knows what they're going to do. They've been very quiet about it. My guess is that, you know, someone will acquire these licenses and they'll be, you know, there might be two contracts in place. One is a contract that says you have to take the programming, and another contract that says you have to take all our national sales. And then those stations, whoever they're owned by, will then have the freedom to hire the, you know, the breakfast and the drive time guys in association with Global, but also they'll have freedom to go and sell local airtime. So actually, this whole thing that's happened with the Office of Fair Trading and things like that is a bit of a farce, because what's happened is that they're going to be able to do what they want to do anyway. It's just that they won't be able to do it by owning the asset themselves as an entity.
Do you think this is an opportunity for somebody from outside of the traditional market, you know, a new player to come into UK radio?
The problem with a new player coming into UK radio is the fact that there's not enough money being made for a new player to be really interested. You know, I would have thought that if a player wanted to come from overseas into the UK, they'd want to have, if not the leading position in the UK, certainly one of the leading positions. So I do think it is very important that if there is any new player coming in at all, they're going to have to come in at a sizable chunk. And to play, I know, a part position in all of this, I can't see how that's appealing to anybody.
John, how is Team Rock getting on?
Well, actually, it's very good. It's you know, it's been going, I think, 8 months now. It's very interesting. Certainly the shareholders like it. The work that we're doing behind the scenes in what Team Rock is and how we're doing it, and the things that we're doing in terms of programming that we're now about to circulate around the world, and the online stuff that all begins in April this year. Everything is ahead of plan, going to plan, and certainly Billy Anderson and his team, they're doing very well. I'm just the chairman of it, of course, and I meet them a couple of times a month just to make sure they're on track. But they're motoring ahead, 100 mile an hour, and it's a very interesting model.
I was going to say, is it a model that you think other people could learn from? I mean, just briefly, it's very much a multi-platform model where radio is just a part of the offer. Is that a way that we could think about integrating radio and allowing it to flourish in the future, do you think?
It's a bit like the BBC model. The BBC creates an awful lot of content, and that content is then put online onto their radio stations, on their TV stations and whatever. And Team Rock's a bit like that. We create content that is for rock fans, and then we distribute that content through the various avenues that we have, which is, you know, online, through the magazines, and of course via the radio station. So it's not too dissimilar to that, but we are solely for rock fans. And it's interesting for people who've listened to Team Rock, this isn't your pop rock. It isn't like the normal classic rock radio stations. It is very very hard rock in many places. And if you love rock, really deep rock, then obviously Team Rock's for you. But it's not like any other rock station on the dial.
It's interesting that, to me, the fact that it is, as you say, emphatically a rock station, whereas other stations like, we could perhaps argue, Planet Rock and Kerrang have always watered down that offer in an attempt to make themselves more popular. The very fact that Team Rock hasn't done that makes it sound very modern in the internet age. You know, that's where the money is, actually, in niches, isn't it?
Well, the money's not in spot airtime. You know, we all know that if you're in radar, one of the problems about being in radar is that the agencies use your radar figures in order to negotiate your price down. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're not in radar and you're not selling spot airtime, then clearly you can be the radio station you want to be. Now, you need good backers for that, and you need a wider plan, which is what we have. And, of course, through our magazines and through the programs that we're now distributing to radio stations around the world, that's what the Team Rock radio essence is. And all the time, I'm constantly impressed myself by the different ways that they're doing things.
More from John in a minute. We'll find out what's happening with the Radio Academy Awards and perhaps get his views on local television too, after this word from one of our sponsors.
UK-voiceover.com.
Audio production starting from £3.
UK-voiceover.com.
On Twitter at UK Voiceover.
It's the Radio Today programme. I'm Trevor Dan. John Myers is with us. John, you've also blogged this week about local television, which of course is launching in several places and will launch at some point up in your neck of the woods. What do you make of that? That's going to be, if it works, a really difficult competitor, isn't it, for UK commercial radio?
I think there's more chance of me losing 10 stone than local television working, Trevor, to be honest.
Well done, Jeremy Hunt, another winner.
I mean, you know, the fool of Jeremy Hunt. Where do I start with this disaster happening? I mean, what we've got here is a radio industry. Let's just go back to basics. What we've got is a radio industry, which is, in a commercial sense, you know, a lot of these local radio stations are surviving by making profits of, you know, tens and 20,000 pounds a year. So I go along to this Made in Television presentation, which is about what they were going to do. And I've always said that the only way they can survive is if they go for the revenue that is currently available through the clients of local radio stations and that of the local press. And by no surprise, that's exactly what they're going to do. And they put up a slide of Sun FM at their presentation about, you know, how much their average client is and how much they're going for. And they're going to offer an amazing 150 television ads for £2,000. Now, clients don't have any more money. So what will happen is that a lot of these local clients will try this micro TV out. And before the clients realise it's a dead duck, some of our cherished local radio stations that we have now will have gone to the wall because there isn't more money available. And they'll just lose money, which means, and this is the whole point of the disaster why Ofcom have licensed these, and it's not Ofcom's fault, as you said, it's Jeremy Hunt, is that what we've got is radio stations who won't be able to deliver the localness they're currently doing now, and neither will local TV because they won't be able to make the money. They'll never be able to deliver the promises that they're making about delivering some of these local programs. So it really is. I thought the presentation, by the way, was very good from them, as you'd expect. It was well delivered, but the numbers just do not add up, Trevor. And when the numbers don't add up, the only thing that gets removed is content.
You're absolutely right. On a brighter note, John, let's talk about the Radio Academy Awards, formerly the Sonys. You're the chairman again this year. I noticed you've replaced a few categories. Last year, you were quite proud that you'd cut the numbers down. This year, you've raised the numbers again. What's going on there?
Oh, well, it was a bit of a whinge fest from people.
Are we surprised? We've sat around that table for a few years, haven't we?
Well, you know, you sit around there and everyone complains and moans about the duration of the evening, even though it's for the last two or three years, it's finished before 11 o'clock, which is a record in itself, as you know. I mean, you and I will remember the day when Terry Wogan did it. And I think we both went to work the next day rather than go to bed because it finished about two.
Yes.
But you know, it finishing, you know, before 11 o'clock now. But we're always, you know, asking ourselves, are the awards relevant? Can we cut any back? Can we make the evening quicker? And so, you know, we merged some awards and we lost, for example, you know, the Personality Speech Award and the Best Interview. And we had such feedback back to the Academy that says, actually, that wasn't a good idea. So, you know, like anything, you try. If it doesn't work, you should be brave enough to say, well, let's restore them. So what we've done is restored quite a lot of the categories that we lost last year. And also, we've got another category this year, one that we brought in, which was to really talk about the creative spirit in radio and try and find an award that recognises creativity in terms of technical innovation. Because if you talk about the future of radio and you talk about where it's going, it has to be led a lot of the time by innovation. And certainly in the technical sense. So we're trying to reward that this year as well.
I'm bound to ask you, because we are talking on a podcast, what happened to the Internet Radio Programme Award and why did that not come back and do you think it ever will?
I don't think there was a great deal of demand for it to come back. I mean, I think the fact that it's a podcast and what platform it happens to be on is irrelevant. I think it's all about the quality of the programme. It should be able to stand up for its quality. with any other programme on any other platform. And I think the committee were not persuaded that that was a good one to bring back. One, because there wasn't a huge demand for it, except from, you know, two or three people who said, let's have that back. But actually, I think it should. I think it's the right decision. It should stand up against any other programme.
And how are the numbers looking this year, John?
Looking good, yeah. I mean, as I say, we lost Sony as a sponsor after 32 years. We made a public decision this year that we wouldn't have a sponsor. I think it would be wrong to try and have a one big sponsor hotly followed from Sony. So we're having deliberately a one-year break, and then we're coming back with a main sponsor from 2015.
And are you involved in those negotiations yourself, John?
Well, I'm taking a lot of people to dinner, which is
that must
which
be
is what
hard.
I love doing, and playing golf.
Very good. Well, we wish you every success with that, and of course with the awards ceremony itself. John, just one final thing: what are you doing these days apart from the golf and the dining?
Well, I'll tell you what I'm doing. I'm doing a week of breakfast on Sun FM at the moment. And that I thought breakfast shows, I forgot that the days have gone by when there isn't an early show anymore. So when they asked me to do the breakfast show, I thought it was from 7 o'clock, only to discover I have to be in at 5.30. So I'm doing a week of that on Sun FM at the moment, which is interesting.
And are they allowing you to say what you like, or is it like, some of the stations you've run yourself?
What I like. I'm pretty much sure that after what I've said about Ofcom this week... they'll all be tuned in.
They will.
Trying to find one thing they can uphold in the show this week. So I'm expecting to have a complaint upheld on Sun FM this week. So I'm doing that. And obviously, I chair Team Rock. I chair the Radio Academy Awards. And that is really as busy enough as I want to be.
Good luck, John. Thank you very much for talking to the Radio Today programme. Always a pleasure. That was John Myers. We'll have some radio news, I think, now. Here's Roy Martin.
The Radio Today programme.
Thank you, Trevor. There's another Jack in town as Reading 107 gets ready to morph into the UK's sixth Jack-branded station. We also hear there's another Jack not too far away and even more planned for later this year. Toby Foster is back at BBC Radio Sheffield after a six-week suspension. He was taken off air after tweeting a few choice words about management just before Christmas. Good to hear him back on the air and hopefully taking a break from Twitter instead. And Tony Blackburn, sensational. He's due to appear on TV. He's on Piers Morgan's Life Stories on the 7th of February. We're told... it should be an interesting show. That's the latest from radiotoday.co.uk. I'm Roy Martin.
In these days of interactivity with the World Wide Web, make it easy for your listeners to share their voices with you via Audioboo. They simply download the app to their mobile device, record a boo, and send to your station. It's that simple. And just to prove a point, this ad was recorded as a boo and sent in from the corner shop. Audioboo, sharing voices with the world.
Radio stations are now often on air 24 hours a day, but that wasn't always the case. This week, 35 years ago, Radio 2 first went round the clock, and so, the night before, it closed down for the very last time.
Tom Edwards will be propelled by a BBC alarm clock to wake you at 5 o'clock with his early show, so if you are working through the night, only 3 hours to go, and then we'll be back with some more company, some more records. So from the people who write it and plan it and produce it and put it out and read it out, which is me, Sarah Kennedy in Broadcasting House, saying a very good night to you. Sleep well.
Radio 2 saying good night for the final time. BBC local radio grew this week 43 years ago.
BBC Radio Blackburn, serving you, the people of North East Lancashire, on 96.4 VHF. The time is 12 o'clock, and to introduce this first official broadcast, here's your station manager, John Musgrave.
Well, I'm sure many of you will recognise that voice, the voice of Tom Naseby. For more than 23 years, the BBC senior announcer in Manchester.
It sounded like 1951, but it was this week in 71 as BBC Radio Blackburn launched. And it turned quietly, of course, into BBC Lancashire 10 years later. This week also saw the launch, 46 years ago, of the BBC radio station, on which I uttered my first words, aged 8.
And the chimes of Little John, Nottingham's city clock, signal the fact that Radio Nottingham is officially on the air. Good evening, everyone. My name is Robert McLeish, and I'd like to hand you over now to your station manager, Gerald Nellicott.
Thank you, Robert. And my first duty and privilege is to introduce our first contributor. And who more appropriate at the opening of what is your local radio station than Councillor A.F. Roberts, the Right Worshipful the Lord Mayor of Nottingham.
That wasn't me. That was the official launch of BBC Radio Nottingham this week in 1968. The BBC local network has always been shaken up a bit from time to time, but the potential of further radical shaking was lessened a little this week 2 years ago, when the Trust asked the BBC to rethink its local radio cuts.
When we looked at all the letters and responses we'd got to the original proposals, and when we thought even harder about local radio, we realised first of all how important local radio is to a sense of community. Secondly, we recognise that even though the proposals were meant to still secure core local radio services, that nevertheless there was a danger of us making too big an impact.
Lord Paton this week in 2012, saving BBC local radio. The potential of cuts arose in the commercial sector this week exactly 30 years ago. The MD of Beacon in Wolverhampton wrote to the IBA, its regulators, saying that only draconian cost-cutting and a reduced information service would address increased operating costs. Down the road in Birmingham at BRMB, though, this week 15 years ago, a wedding with two strangers.
Having both made the necessary declarations, you are now married to each other. Husband and wife together.
Right, here we go then. World exclusive with the new bride and groom, Carla and Greg. Carla first. Well, congratulations. You're a married woman.
I am, yes. Thanks very much.
What do you make? I mean, come on. Is this some kind of big stunt on your behalf? Or do you look at that man and think, I reckon I could fall madly in love? Because you can't love him at the moment, but you think you could love him?
Still one of the most talked about station stunts this week in 1999. The marriage lasted 3 months, and the bride later went on to marry BRMB's Jeremy Kyle 3 years later. Back then, the BSC was in charge of radio taste and decency, and this week, 20 years ago, that Broadcasting Standards Council said it planned to research acceptable language for radio, and they tested a list of offensive words to see how offensive they were. How'd you do that research? With a clipboard in the street. Excuse me, madam. I have the actual list of offensive words here, so please do turn off if you're easily offended. At number 18 in the league table back then, dickhead. 17, it was shit. 14, it was piss off. And at number 1, and that would be purely gratuitous to mention, wouldn't it? No rude words, though, on a programme launched this week in 1942. It became the longest-running factual programme in the history of radio.
At one time, you made a great reputation as a stunt commentator. I remember one broadcast you did as a bareback circus rider.
That was one of them, yes. But that, of course, was during the development period of radio. And these particular stunts, they were broadcasting to the top of a fire escape and then jumping into
an early edition of Desert Island Discs with creator and host Roy Plumley. And there he was in conversation there with BBC newsreader John Snagg. If you're one of the BBC top brass, I might warn you this has been a funny old week in history, and probably best avoided in future. It's 10 years this week since Greg Dyke resigned following criticism of the BBC in the Hutton inquiry.
I hope that a line can now be drawn under this whole episode. Throughout this affair, my sole aim as Director General of the BBC has been to defend our editorial independence and to act in the public interest.
And it's 72 years this week since Fred Ogilvy resigned as joint DG at the BBC. He had enough, really. And it's 5 years since Bob Shannon was appointed controller of BBC Radio 2 following the resignation of Leslie Douglas in the Saxgate affair.
Oh, no. What, this is Andrew Sachs's answer phone?
And isn't it amazing that in the 21st century, the biggest BBC stories revolve around radio rather than television? Here's one more celebration we can't forget this week.
Lonnie Hill, no relation to Uphill, and Could It Be Love? You know, it might be love because love has its ups and downs. Radio London, where you're never more than one record away from a soul smash hit. Shalimar, I've got a greatest hits album out at the moment. I didn't say hits.
Happy 71st birthday to Tony Blackburn. So with the announcement 7 years ago that the Saga stations would be renamed Smooth, Wireless Group making an offer 10 years ago for Forever Broadcasting, and the pages of Book at Bedtime being opened for the first time 65 years ago. Those are this week's Radio Moments. Radio
Moments. Splendid stuff as always from David Lloyd. Always a pleasure to hear the voice of Gerald Nethercott, the man who gave us the Royal Arse Hortillery. That's your Radio Today programme for this week. More next time. It's been a TDC production. I'm Trevor at trevordan.com. See you soon.